Johnson Thornburg, presenting Law of Corporate Information, New Issues on Old Foundations. And first, let me give a little bit of a game plan for what we want to accomplish today. Looking at slide two, I've called this an anecdotal history of law and technology in four acts. And what we're going to, and I will talk about what those four acts are in just a moment, but we want to summarize several areas of the law that relate to corporate information, both sort of pre-technology age a little bit and after the technology explosion. And I'd like to draw some really sort of parallels and connections between them. If you're, this is an area that you're not highly expert in, you know, hopefully this gives you some, I think gives you some good context, and if it is an area where you do have some experience and expertise, would hope that some of these connections are interesting and provoke thought and discussion and also useful. And we're going to just throughout talk about some strategies for our clients to address some of these issues. This is not a, it's not a big case law update. Rather, it's really to look at these areas in context and come away with some strategies that are good for our clients. In these four areas, I will keep coming back to three themes, sort of variables that I think are helpful to think about this area, and we'll expand on each of these as we go along. But the first one is that at the core of these areas of the law is, you know, I would just call reasonableness, alignment with business purposes, job relatedness. Those are different things, of course, to some degree in different legal contexts, but I think generally all around some sort of a reasonable person kind of standard if you go back to first year torts. And that's not unique, of course, to this area of the law, but I am, you know, at my core, a labor employment lawyer, and so many of my analogies will relate to that. But so in my area, you know, just to give a particular area, the item in the law that doesn't fall in this, I mean, take the Family Medical Leave Act, and that's not, pointing that out, it's not a policy commentary that is or is not reasonable, but it's basically something that is created by statute, a set of obligations, that there's a policy decision we ought to have this, or minimum wage, or how we compute overtime. And I think those distinguished a little bit. And as we talk about some of these different areas, we'll talk about areas where this kind of reasonableness core has been supplemented or expanded upon by statutory obligations. The second of the three themes we'll have our eye on is the enforcement environment. And that'll be particularly relevant, I think, to the last couple of areas we'll talk about. What is the federal government doing? What are different states doing? And that obviously, in lots of areas, affects very much our clients' lives on these things. And then here's the last one, which is, I'm going to give a employment law analogy here as well to illustrate. To what extent is the issue a cultural issue where you are needing to change or address or manage human behavior versus something that to a large extent can be fixed with a document? And probably each one has elements of both, certainly. And generally, I don't think this is not a revolutionary thought. I mean, changing the behavioral issues is harder. So I do think it's an important distinction. So I'm going to give you, in just a little bit of detail, an analogy from the labor and employment area that sort of fits my practice, the timing of how long I've been practicing. And so I started in the late 1980s, and an area that is a cultural behavioral issue is sexual harassment, and which became certainly a cause of action and an area of interest before the late 80s, but ever since I've been practicing, we put on seminars, we put on programs, we write articles, and we always try and think of new and cutting-edge issues. But the fact is, you give people a lot of choices. Tons of people will still go to the sexual harassment session because it never goes away, because, sure, there are things you can do to manage liability and minimize the risk of liability as an organization, but people still do dumb stuff. You can never completely fix that. In contrast, when I had first started practicing, and practiced in Ohio, but I think this is true in lots of states, there are many implied contract of employment cases where you would have very fact-specific cases, and the plaintiff would say, I was promised that I would have an opportunity to have this promotion, or I was promised that I would be here indefinitely unless there were just cause. And none of this stuff would be written down. There'd be things that were more or less on point. There'd be a summary judgment motion. Some would go some way, some would go the other. Courts of appeals decisions all over the place. And then somewhere in the early 1990s, the Ohio Supreme Court said, well, if you have a disclaimer in your handbook that says, I'm at will, nobody can change that except the president of the company, et cetera, it basically, prevents these suits. Everybody did that. You almost never see them anymore. And we're going to give some examples of that. I know that that doesn't directly relate to the corporate information, but I think that's an important distinction as we look at these areas. So the four acts, so to speak, and do this in somewhat quick summary form, and then we'll dig in. The first is workplace monitoring. The next is trade secrets. Probably a pretty heavy dose of employee electronic communications outside the organization, and there I'm most specifically referring to the National Labor Relations Board and how it has addressed